I just wanted to talk briefly about the triggers for arrhythmias, because any of you with these conditions that we see in clinic will tell you about things to avoid and things we'd prefer you didn't participate in if you have one of these conditions. And that's because we know that certain things can trigger an arrhythmia if you have one of these underlying conditions or gene abnormalities. In long QT syndrome, high-level exercise can potentially trigger arrhythmias. Emotion, there seems to be something about swimming and diving that can potentially aggravate arrhythmias in long QT. And also loud noises like alarm clocks and telephones ringing. And you can't always avoid all of these triggers, but simple things like, you know, don't have an alarm clock right next to your bed to wake you up suddenly in the middle of the night, and that sort of thing we tend to try and tell people to avoid. CPVT is really, the arrhythmias are so closely linked to exercise, we're very restrictive about how much exercise a patient with CPVT can do, because the arrhythmias really come on at certain heart rates and levels of exercise. So that's really important for a patient with CPVT. Brugada is different. The arrhythmias in Brugada don't tend to occur during exercise and wakeful periods, more so resting and sleeping. So the restrictions on sports are not so pertinent to Brugada. So this is a little table I thought I'd show, because it's part of the guidelines in what, you know, we often try and convey what types of sports are okay to participate in, because, you know, it's our job to let you know what you can do, and often specific sports, you know, people are interested in particular things, and it's useful to look at where they fit in on this scale. So there's the sports are divided into a sort of dynamic component and what we call a static component. So the muscle kind of strength and how much your heart rate goes up during exercise for each of these. Now the green and the blue sports are the sort of lower intensity sports that we generally try and steer people more towards this end than the red end, which is really high intensity, like rowing, triathlon, competing, cycling, especially long distance cycling. So generally things in this sort of corner are preferable to this corner, but it's not just a sport, it's the level of intensity. So if someone likes soccer, they play it on a social basis and it's kind of casual and fun, that's absolutely fine. But obviously high level competitive soccer is different. So it's the sport and it's also the intensity of participation, which we try and individualise all those discussions. So in general, the treatment of these conditions broadly, there are three main strategies. Lifestyle modifications and changes are sort of key for everyone, and then medications and implantable defibrillators are sort of individualised. For long QT syndrome, as I mentioned, high-level sports, competition sports are generally not so advisable, but regular exercise definitely we'd encourage. And then avoidance of, again, swimming and diving are particular triggers. So we really prefer patients with long QT not to do that. Medications, most patients with long QT will be treated with beta blockers. And I've just listed the common ones there that we use, nadolol, atenolol, propranolol. The other really important thing about medications in long QT syndrome patients is which ones to avoid. And there's quite a long list of medications to avoid. I always advise people to check with a pharmacist before putting anything in their mouth, like whether it be an antibiotic, an antihistamine. You know, some of these quite commonly used medications can aggravate long QT syndrome. So if you like, you can check a website yourself, but always mention to a pharmacist before you take anything, even over the counter. Defibrillators are used in some patients with long QT syndrome. As a general rule, somebody who has a very, very prolonged QT interval or who has blackout episodes whilst taking medications, that's the sort of patient we might consider implanting a defibrillator in. CPVT, as I mentioned, is the arrhythmias are so closely linked to exercise. We're quite strict about exercise restriction in CPVT. Patients with CPVT, again, will be managed with the beta blocker medication. So that might be the metoprolols, atenolols, that you may be familiar with. Often we perform an exercise stress test while a patient is taking a beta blocker to ensure that we are suppressing the arrhythmias and we're not finding any extra beats or any arrhythmias on the medications. If we do find that, we might add another medication called flecainide. CPVT, we also occasionally consider what we call a cardiac sympathetic denervation, and just very simply, there are sympathetic nerve fibres which control all those adrenergic inputs to the heart, and they are responsible for triggering the arrhythmias, the adrenergic stimulus. So if we can disrupt that communication to the heart, that has been shown in patients, especially who have CPVT and lots of arrhythmias or lots of shocks from their device, that can be quite effective in controlling the arrhythmias. And of course, again, defibrillators when necessary. Now, Brugada is a little trickier. In patients who are picked up with Brugada completely incidentally, so very asymptomatic, it's sort of found because of an ECG done for another reason, and no one's ever had a symptom from related to the Brugada. Often we just observe and monitor very closely, so the patients will have regular reviews, and you know, there are things that we monitor for, but there's no sort of specific medications or other defibrillators are not usually indicated in that situation. In a individual with Brugada who's had blackouts that we think may be related to heart rhythm problems, they'd progress straight to an ICD. And just to sort of finish up reflecting what Chris has mentioned, you know, this multidisciplinary approach that we practice with cardiologists and genetic testing and with your local doctors and genetic counselling and support groups and pathologists are really, we think, the sort of best way to manage families, because, you know, these conditions are genetic and we need to think of patients within their families. So this this model is what we prefer, and just want to make the point that if we can detect these conditions, we can manage them with all of our contemporary medications and our defibrillators. Many patients do really, really well, and we can effectively treat lots of people with these conditions. And in the future, I mean, I guess the holy grail would be to correct the gene abnormality, to silence the abnormal genes causing these arrhythmia syndromes. At the moment, we're not really there yet, and it's not something that I can foresee in the short-term future, but that's sort of ultimately where a lot of this research is headed towards, is that treating that gene fault itself, and, you know, maybe in 20 years' time when we're all here again, we can be talking more about this, but that's I guess, bit of a